Hello, and welcome everyone. Can everyone hear me? Yes. Okay, good. We started off this week good. I spent a lot of time trying to get the technology just right, so I'm glad it's finally working, and I apologize for all that confusion the last couple weeks. To be honest, I spent a lot of time, just working with it and clicking around, and I think both times it was just a little bit of a fluke, So, anyways, welcome everyone. So I thought we'd start this week, as we always do, just by giving ourselves permission to let go of the week, let go of the weekend. In the Muslim tradition, before you or as soon as you walk into the mosque, immediately you go and you wash your hands all the way, your forearms, your hands, all the way up to your elbows, you wash your face, and you clean off the day. And there's something that's quite beautiful about that. It's this sense of just letting go and saying, I am here. I am here. And so let us all join in this way where we're just energetically giving ourselves permission just to let go. Just to let go of the day, the week, let all those vibrations, heaviness from life, let it all just empty out of you. And fully arrive here. And so we're simply breathing, feeling, and just letting go. Letting go. And sometimes we're letting go of great drama, great tragedy. Sometimes we're letting go of just mundane thoughts. But either way, let us just step into this flow of divinity. Let us open our hearts. Let us open our minds, our crown chakra. And simply receive. Receive. And so we're taking some deep, full belly breaths. Just noticing the rise and the fall of the breath. Rise and the fall of the belly. Feeling your feet on the floor. Your butt seated in the chair, the cushion. We're simply letting go. Letting go and fully arriving here. So let's notice what's here. Do we notice this vast spaciousness, which our mind actually is? Our mind is spacious. It's silent. It's already free, already free. And so can you notice the space out of which my voice arises? Can you notice the space out of which thoughts and sounds arise? And so I invite you to let go. Let go fully, let go deeply into this wonderful silence, this nourishing silence. And simply breathe. Simply breathe. So we're feeling, breathing, and just letting go. and saying yes to life, yes to this moment. We're saying yes to God's grace. We're inviting this grace to pour into us and to fill this silence. To fill this silence. We're breathing, feeling, letting go. And just saying yes. And so I invite you to bring your full attention to your crown chakra and just breathe and feel. Notice the crown coming alive. Perhaps you feel a sense of warmth in the crown chakra. Notice spaciousness and the silence of the third eye. Relaxing the throat chakra and inviting a flow of divinity just to trickle down from heaven above, down through the crown, through the space of the third eye. Down through the throat and into the heart. Of course, relaxing and feeling just this quiet presence of innocence in the heart. We're relaxing more deeply, more fully. The solar plexus, the hara, the pelvis, the pelvic floor, the legs, the feet, the arms, the hands. We're just letting go and giving ourselves full permission to receive God's grace. Receive this absolute divinity, which you are, which you are. And so as we're open in this way, we're beginning to feel our body come alive. We're feeling the seven chakras come online. Feeling the sense of lightness of being. Feeling the sense of divinity throughout. And in the most humble and open-hearted way, you're just saying yes. Yes to this moment. Yes to this absolute silence, which is here. Yes to this feeling of spaciousness and freedom. We're saying yes to this flow of light and divinity just gently coming down into you. It's almost so subtle this evening. So subtle that most individuals may miss it. But the more you open, the more you let go, the more you'll discover this light growing in you. This divinity giving birth. in you and as you. So you may feel just this gentle buzz, this quiet sense of divinity. Gentle flow of light. So we are experiencing our radiance and this greater presence of light just pouring down into us. All the while just gently saying yes. Yes. And so from this space of openness, from this space of receptivity, I invite you just to fully let go. There's nowhere you need to be. Nothing you need to do. We're simply receiving. Receiving the beauty of our own nature and receiving the grace of God, receiving our divinity and this simultaneously this greater divinity all the while just breathing in and breathing out. Giving ourselves permission just to do nothing. Giving ourselves permission to be nothing. To be nobody. You may notice the more you let go, the more you let go into this grace and this innocence, the more you let go into this space of freedom, your very nature grows, it expands. The boundaries between you and life, between you and God, between you and the Absolute, they begin to fade and disappear. And so we're breathing, feeling, and releasing ourselves from our everyday consciousness. Stepping into the hugeness of what we are. And let us imagine together, from this space of openness, we're giving ourselves permission to turn awareness upon itself. To turn awareness upon itself. Instead of looking outward at thought or emotions or movements of sensations, can you direct your awareness inward? And let the experience implode upon itself. Now what happens? When you truly turn awareness upon itself, what's there? What's here right now, this moment? In this blankness, in this silence, do you see yourself? Do you recognize the hugeness of the Absolute in you as you? Total emptiness, total freedom. Right here, right now. And so from this space, I'm going to transition into the talk, which will be on the Absolute and the Relative. Absolute and relative experience of true nature, being fully human, fully divine. And so before I get into the talk, I want to thank everyone for the donations this last week, especially Felix, and I want to especially thank Suzanne for all of her behind the scenes hard work and just making all of this possible. Thank you so much, Suzanne. She's greatly supportive in getting these webcasts out there and putting things on YouTube and helping me with setting the technology up and helping it to work and getting the website running and all that kind of thing. So my heart goes out to you. Thank you so much, Suzanne, for the support you've given me and the support you've given the community. And so there's many ways we can help, whether it be financially or through our time. It's really supportive in spreading the Dharma. And so I thank you, and I want to thank you from the community. So recently, I spoke about this a couple weeks ago, but I've been reading this book by Lama Soltram. She's one of my teachers, and I'll remind you all of the book. It's called Wisdom Rising, and she was the first Tibetan, first American, first Westerner to become a Tibetan nun, and she's taught in the Tibetan tradition for decades and decades now. I think she's in her 70s. But one of the things I wanted to read is I just wanted to read a short, just a couple pages from her latest book. And she's speaking about this notion of one ground. One ground. And so what does it mean that the Absolute and the Relative are one? What does it mean that we are all one? How is this possible? And she writes it in such an eloquent manner, I thought I would just share just a little bit from her book. She writes, "Let's start by understanding what one ground actually means here. One ground is often referred to as the ground of being, or the Great Mother, meaning literally the ground out of which all beings and all things arise." And so right away it's easy for us to get confused by what does this mean, the ground of all being, because when you look out at life you see that there's 10 million different things, 10 million different objects. There's things here and there's things there. And I was speaking with a good friend of mine. He's a scientist, and he's like the chief scientific officer for this big company in Switzerland. And so he has science in his blood. And so I was sitting with him one day, and I was just asking him. I said, "Do you notice? Do you notice that the very things that you are aware of and the very nature of awareness are the same? Do you notice that?" Do you notice that they are all the same, made out of the same material? Do you notice that the very space of awareness and that which you are aware of are the same? And so what does that mean? What does that mean? Like if you ever stare at an object, like a tree, if you ever stare at the sky, if you ever stare at your dog, and just give yourself full permission just to let go. Full permission to let go. What you begin to notice is there's this feeling of total non-division between you, the space that you are, the very space of awareness, and what it is that you are looking at. And we can play this game right now if you imagine just resting here. Resting here in this space of silence. And if you notice a thought arising, so give yourself permission to have a thought. And then if you look directly at that thought and feel the thought, what you begin to notice is that thoughts are empty. Thoughts are empty. They're made up of no thing. Just like the space of awareness is made up of no thing. There's, you know, awareness is spacious, it's alive, it's intelligent. There's a flow to it, a presence to it. You know, what the way Lama Sochum describes it is, you know, the space of awareness is, you know, the ground of being is the great mother, Pragna Paramita. It's pregnant with all potential. So the very space of awareness, if you feel into it, it feels pregnant, full, and yet totally empty. And out of this potential, you'll notice thoughts arise. Worlds arise, you and me arise. Everything is made out of the ground of being. And so I was sitting there with my scientist friend, and I was asking him this question because he's very attached to the space of silence, and he really loves it. He's really getting comfortable with this space of silence and letting go into it. And I just gently asked him one day, do you notice that this space of silence, this space of awareness, and the very nature of thought are made up of the same material? Because most people on the path, they see thought as a problem. They see their lives as a problem. They see their children as a problem. They see their wife or their husband as a problem. They see the barking dog next door as a problem. It's disturbing my silence. But if you look directly at anything and experience it, feel into it, let go into it. Like if you feel a thought, if you feel into the sound of my voice, you'll notice it's completely empty, completely free. It has a gentle radiance, a sense of aliveness to it. But there's this great freedom because everything is made out of the ground of being. Everything is the ground of being. The absolute and relative are one. And so many people on the spiritual path are simply trying to get rid of the relative. And well, that would be quite impossible. Quite impossible to get rid of the relative. And so then the great question is, well, how do we work with the relative? How do we work with it? If the relative, you know, the way the Buddha taught about the relative is, you know, he said everything is the ground of being. You know, there's this prayer, and let me see if I can pull it up. This wasn't from the first Buddha, but from one of the later Buddhas. That said, the entire world of all appearances and possibilities, of samsara and nirvana, one ground, two paths, two results. This is the magical display of innate awareness and the non-recognition of awareness. And so what he means by this is that there's two paths. One path is that you see awareness, you see the ground of being everywhere. And then the other path is the path of samsara, where you identify with all the little objects. And the Buddha says, well, then you create suffering because there's this inherent separation. Now, I like to look at the path as, you know, more in scientific terms, is that God created a world, an evolutionary world. And so then there's the possibility, the potentiality to grow, to change, to evolve, to become greater and greater manifestations of divinity. Now, this is the path of true Tantra. And the way the Buddhists, you know, the Tantric Buddhists talk about this is they see this at everything as a lower form and a higher form. But everything is pregnant with this greater potential. And so the idea in Tantra is you're growing, you're evolving into this greater sense of being. You're letting go into that which is greater. And when you see your life not as a problem, but as this movement of growing into the absolute and allowing the absolute to express itself to its fullness in the world. Well, this is the point of life. This is the movement of life. And you don't have to be spiritual to notice this. If you just look out, if you look out at all creation, you begin to see this. All of life is growing and evolving. And so I have a big list of questions today, and so I better... You know, I better pull them up here on my screen. And of course, if anyone has a question, please, you know, bring it forward. I'd be happy to speak about it. So you can ask for the mic, or you can, write me a question. Either way is wonderful. But most of us struggle with the relative. Most of us do not struggle with the absolute. If we do struggle with the absolute, it's in the sense that, you know, to put it bluntly, we're probably not meditating enough. So if you want to know the absolute, be quiet, sit in silence, go on retreat. You know, I'm going to be offering a retreat later in August, and so I invite you to join me. But retreat time is very powerful. Where you give yourself permission to be free of distraction so you can totally let go into your absolute nature. But where most of our questions arise is, well, with our everyday life. Our everyday life. And so, you know, this question, it was more of a comment. Sophia wrote me this long, long email telling me, you know, how she was really struggling. She was feeling overwhelmed with symptoms, you know, having this fear of survival, trying to survive in the world, not having enough money. You know, was really, really struggling. And at the same time, she was desiring this sense of just wanting to let go and to be held by life. And so this is very much, you know, the dance of the absolute and the relative. As many of us on the path, we know this experience where we want to do this in work, but the healing work, you know, for many of us, it costs money to visit teachers, to go on retreats, to visit healers or massage therapists or whatever it is. You know, many of us struggle or have struggled on the path financially. You know, it'd be easy just to look at, you know, any kind of money issue from an absolute perspective and say, oh, that's all just samsara. That's not the truth. That's just an illusion. But see, that's not actually helpful. I mean, if you can see it as an illusion and then all of a sudden you find yourself having plenty, well, that's wonderful, but that's rarely the case because this is an evolutionary world. You have to look at the relative and say, what is this about? What is God trying to show me? What is she trying to teach me here? What is she wanting me to embody? And for most of us, you know, it's this journey of it. It's a couple of things. When we struggle financially, it normally has to do with lack of self-worth, perhaps from just being beat up too much by life or not having enough, you know, having these ideas of lack in our consciousness. This is a world of lack. And so then when we live in this way where we have this feeling where we see the world, we see that the world is lacking and that we don't have enough. And we keep trying to ignore the issue of money. What we find is that, you know, oftentimes we'll find ourselves broke because God doesn't allow us to ignore money. Money is simply a manifestation of empowerment. And so the more you believe in yourself, the more you're willing to love yourself, the more you're willing to take the time to do your healing work on your own, the more you value yourself, what you'll find is money starts to come, things start to fall in place. But it doesn't mean that money just falls out of the sky. Oftentimes it will ask us to get a job, to work hard. And as we're working hard, we're telling life, I believe in myself. I believe in myself enough to take care of me. I believe in myself enough to grow up and to go out and get a job, even though it's hard, even though it's difficult. What I find is there's many spiritual people. You know, I was one of them who sat on the couch and thought that God should just, you know, send me checks in the mail for laying there and to do my healing journey all by myself. But that wasn't the case. God made me get up and work. And as I worked, you know, I began to develop this sense of strength, this sense of backbone. I made myself important. I didn't wait for someone else to come in and save me. I tried that, but it didn't work. I had to save myself. I had to lift myself up. But not from ego, but through letting go to the goodness of your heart. You're doing this because you love yourself. And then the more you love yourself, the more this absolute nature, which is pregnant with all phenomena, comes forward and gives birth in your life. It may show up in the form of clients. It may show up in the form of work. It may show up in the form of the right job or, you know, a new friend who's a healer who's willing to work with you at a discounted rate or whatever it is. And so it's this willingness to believe, to know that the world is good, that the world is abundant, that you are loved by God. This is the way forward. This is the way forward. It's easy to fall into despair when we don't have money, when we are lacking. And so the great invitation here is, can you walk forward with trust, with your head held high, with your heart up, and say yes to life, even though you may have been beat up by life. You say yes to that which is good, that which is true. Okay, beautiful. And so here's a question that just came in from Tom. Hello, Craig. I was wondering if you could speak about fear. Yes. Yes, I love the topic of fear because when you look at this nature of, say, the absolute and the relative, when you step forward into the absolute, most people are terrified of the absolute because it seems so big, so immense. You know, Lama Soltram here was speaking about the ground of being. You know, one of the ways the Buddha spoke about the ground of being, he often talked about this in Zen, is called the groundless ground. So when you come forward and begin to look at and directly experience the absolute, it's so big, it's so vast. It can be terrifying for the ego. Terrifying because what fear is oftentimes it has to do with a sense of feeling out of control. Now, if we're talking about relative fear, you know, if you're having fearful thoughts or you know, fearful sensations, I invite you to feel your feet on the ground and to look around and see, is there anything dangerous here? Is there anything I actually need to worry about? Is there anything I need to take care of? You know, I had this funny experience the other night. I was on a motorcycle ride in La Plata Canyon here in Colorado, and there were some campers, and one of the campers had two pit bulls. And the pit bulls began to circle me. And it wasn't just me on my motorcycle. I actually had my wife and my 4-year-old. There were three of us. We were kind of goofing around, you know, on the trails. And we were being charged by these pit bulls. And they were attacking, you know, trying to bite me and trying to bite at my little daughter. And, you know, I almost dropped the motorcycle like three or four times. They forced me off the trail and off the road. And I couldn't pass them because the way they were just circling around me, and it was, you know, it could have been something that I was really terrified of. It would have been wise to have been, you know, scared of it, you know. So I was, you know, yelling at them and telling them, you know, get out of the way, and, you know, honking the horn and, you know, trying to scare them to get them to leave us alone. You know, eventually I outmaneuvered them after almost wrecking, you know, three or four times. But my little girl was, you know, she was quite scared, and my wife was quite scared. And you know, so there's good, healthy fear. You know, if you're being attacked by dogs, run, get out of there, make loud noises. That's wise. But 99.9% of the time, most fear is just psychological fear. And so if you look at it, if you see it directly, you'll notice there's nothing actually here to be afraid of. Nothing actually here. If you look at your thoughts directly, you'll notice they're empty. If you notice the sensations directly, you'll notice they're empty. There's nothing actually here coming to get us. Now, if there's something in your life, you know, like I was speaking about before, if we don't have any money, then, well, we need to get a job. Sometimes fear drives us towards, you know, right action. But if it's simply fear, like when we're sitting in meditation, what you'll notice is when you really feel into fear, and this is what I was speaking about before, when you let go into the ground, the groundless ground, it feels as if you're free falling through space. I know I say this often, but I often reach down and touch the ground just to make sure it's still there. Because the feeling inside is just this feeling that the ground is falling out from under me. So the direct experience of fear, when you really feel into the truth of it, is the direct experience of the groundless ground. They're one and the same. But the more you let go into this time, you begin to see that fear transforms into excitement. You feel exhilarated to be alive. It feels incredible to be awake. But when we experience fear just from an egoic perspective, well, there's just lots of racing thoughts and feelings, and you feel like maybe you're being choked. And so the big thing is just to relax. Breathe deeply into fear. Breathe directly into fear. And see, is this something to be frightened of, or is it simply just a feeling? Sometimes when you feel into fear, and there's lots of sensations that come with it, like visceral sensations, you'll notice that there's something here that we're avoiding. You know, maybe there's an old wound or something that needs to be embraced, something that needs to be met with love before it will release from your consciousness. And so this is a good moment, you know, to have some good old-fashioned, just, you know, Buddhist loving kindness, where we're just breathing into the fear, seeing what's beneath it, seeing what's at the root of it. Perhaps it's an old memory or an old thought, or perhaps there's something on our mind which we're not fully acknowledging. And we breathe into it, we meet it with love, and as we do so, we may notice tears flow through our consciousness, our body shakes or trembles. We may notice old memories are releasing from us. And then again, you're left with, you know, as the emotion rolls out of you, you're left with the sense of freedom, the sense of aliveness, perhaps a sense of love and compassion. And if it's purely fear, you'll feel that feeling of that groundlessness. You know, some of you, if you've ever had like a really good cry, and you give yourself permission just to feel, just to be like ripped wide open and vulnerable, you'll notice, oh, there's this groundless quality to it that kind of feels exciting and exhilarating. And so, Tom, I encourage you just to play with that a little bit, to experience it. And as always, if it's something real, you know, like when I was a motorcycle being, you know, chased by these dogs, you know, you do what you need to do to get the hell out of there. That's wise. But if it's, you know, just psychological and there's no real danger, then you meet it with love and let it dissolve before your eyes. It's a beautiful question. Okay, let's see. A bunch of other questions here. Let me see if I can get to them. Craig, how can I let go of deep suffering coming along from my stressed out mind and its symptoms to enter new realms of being? And how do I step into this essence, you know, that you speak about of the chakras in our energetic body? Yeah, so there's a lot of questions here. Let's see here. So I spoke already about letting go of deep suffering. So the big thing with letting go of deep suffering is can you meet it with love? And so what most of us do, you know, because we have these egos, our egos try to avoid pain. And so can you take the time to stop? And just scan your body and just notice, where is the suffering rooted? In which particular chakra center? You know, some people have tremendous pain in their root chakra or in their heart. Most people say they have all this pain in their head, but you know, in the third eye chakra, you know, if you have lots of thoughts, I encourage you just to look deeper and see, are these thoughts rooted in your heart, in your solar plexus, in your belly? Because each of the chakra centers, they can be a center of light, and divinity, they can also be a place where we've stuffed pain. And so the invitation here is to scan your body, to be deeply mindful, and say, what's the root of this pain? Where's it at? And can you pay particular attention to that chakra center? Breathe into it. Allow that pain to intensify. And can you meet it with love consistently? Not just for one breath, but can you meet it for hours and hours until it dissolves? So if there's pain in your body and you want to get to know the chakra centers, meet the pain with love. And then notice what's there. What's there after the pain unravels? That's a beautiful question. I get that one, a couple times a day. In fact, I think I've gotten that question through a couple emails here. So, this next question is from Kiara. When something comes up, like a habit that you see is not yours, but perhaps it belongs to your parents or your conditioning, how does one work with that? Do I just observe it and not buy into it? I'll give you an example, Craig. Today I noticed there was a bit of laziness in me. And so I didn't necessarily do what was good for me. When I felt into that energy, I saw clearly it wasn't my energy, but it belonged to my father. So I spoke to it like it was my own inner child with love. Is that the best way to approach it? Yes, yes, that's a wonderful way to approach it. And so the first thing I recommend is when you see this, so if you're sitting there and you're noticing something like laziness or anger or resentment, you know, it's not enough just to notice it. I encourage you also to take the next step, which is to come into your heart, to find that place of innocence within you. It's from this place of innocence and love and compassion that we can actually do some healing work. If we don't connect with our innocence, if we don't connect with this space of compassion, what will happen is, you know, we'll just be practicing psychology. And sometimes, you know, things can be healed through psychology. But, you know, the way I work as a counselor in the world of psychology is when someone comes into my office, when I see them on Skype, I see their true nature first and foremost. I see their heart. I see their innate goodness. And from this goodness, this innate goodness that they are, I support them. I support that goodness in coming forward. And so I invite you to Kiara, to get in touch with this goodness. Get in touch with this love. Get in touch with your goddess nature. Like when I sit with you, there's such a hugeness of divinity. There's such a power there. So we get in touch with that presence of love. And from that presence of love, yes, you talk to your pain like it's a child. You breathe in and out. You know, so often in the world of self-help, people just do these like empty affirmations where they say, I am beautiful, I am wealthy, I am this, I am that. But if we're not in touch with our heart, those affirmations, they just kind of become meaningless. They don't have any power to them. But if you can let go and come into your heart, and from this place of love, you love your own presence. You love your own inner child. Then true healing can happen. And from this place, we're stepping into this absolute nature. We can even call upon God, say, Lord, give birth into me. Give me the strength to love myself. Give me the strength to forgive. Give me the strength to say the right thing. Give me the strength to be consistent with this child within me. And so we call upon God. We say, Lord, open up in me. call upon your true nature and you say, true nature, come forward. My goddess nature, come forward and help me love this. And so, yes, yes. And so the big thing is that we're being conscious. We are choosing not to repeat the past. We're choosing not to be our parents. And we're breathing deeply into our belly. And we're discovering our power of choice. I have the power to choose not to be my past. I have the power to choose not to be my parents. I have the power to choose to live from my own heart space. And so, yes, this is the choice we're making. Coming into our heart, and then we're deepening into the belly, and we're seeing, I have the power to choose to love that which in the past I've called unlovable. Okay, great. Great. So, here's some questions from Micah in Germany. He says, Craig, what is your definition of the superego? The superego is that thing within us that's always judging. It's judging, you know, mostly it's judging ourselves, but occasionally it judges others. It's always trying to do the right thing, say the right thing. But it's the quality of it. If you feel into superego, oftentimes you'll feel it in your head in a judgmental way, or you'll feel it in your throat in a repressive way. And here's what I mean by that. You know, there's the normal, you know, egoic fight or flight response. But with the superego responses, it's actually more complicated. It's a thing that's always trying to micromanage our own behavior. And so in your head, it may be like that inner judge, that inner critic, that inner lawyer. And in your throat, it's that force that's always micromanaging feelings and emotions. And so back to Tom's question about how to work with fear. You know, one of the big things with working with fear is opening the throat chakra and giving yourself permission to feel the fear. But the way most people work with fear is they try to work with it in a neurotic, superegoic kind of way. They stay up in their head. They try to micromanage their experience. And their throat chakra is like clenched. And if you notice what it's doing, it's repressing that fear back into the body. And so to really work with fear, you have to open the throat chakra. Or maybe it's, you know, overwhelming sadness or anger or whatever it is. You open the throat and you give yourself permission to feel what's in your heart. Feel what's in your body. You give that energy permission to come forward. It's that willingness to breathe into it, and you should feel like you're losing control. That's a good sign. But because you're staying rooted in your heart, even though you feel like you're losing control, what you notice is you're just breathing and you're just letting go. In order to let go, you have to let go of control. In order to heal, you have to let go of control. You have to let go of that superego. You have to open that throat chakra. And so very much, you know, the superego is those forces that control and repress. And if we want to live in a way that is greater than superego, we have to trust ourselves. We have to trust that if I let go into fear, I'm not going to explode or melt or fall apart. It will feel that way. But as you breathe through it, you notice, oh, I'm still alive. I'm still here. I'm still here. Okay. Beautiful. I have a lot of questions here. Let's see if I can get through some of these quicker. If we have strong emotions, could it be that, could it still be an appropriate reaction in a situation? Let me see if this question makes sense to me. If I Okay, I'm going to have to skip one because I think the wording is a little bit confusing for me. So here's a question about sexuality. If we feel the need, deep and intense desire for sex? Is it good to release it? It feels like it would really free blocked energy, or to not share our energies with someone for that purpose. Yeah, that's a great question. The way I approach sex and sexuality is I look at this, we want to have the right relationship with sex. So I can remember back when I was with my teacher, the first couple of years I was with him, I lived, in a celibate way, and what I noticed is I had all this tremendous, sexual energy moving through my body. It was quite intense. It drove me, a little bit crazy how much energy, was moving through that center. But it wasn't moving because I was living in a celibate manner. And I was quite young. I was, probably 20, 20 or, from years 20 to 22 or 23, something like that. And so I just breathed with that energy. I learned from it. I learned how powerful that energy was. But I chose, because I was celibate, not to release it. Now, of course, the majority of us are no longer celibate, or we're not celibate. And so if you choose to release the energy, whether it's on your own or with someone else, I encourage you to do it in a loving way, with someone you feel safe with. I'm not a fan of sleeping around, just to express energies. I mean, anytime sex is involved, we can end up with a pregnancy or some, kind of sickness that stays with us the rest of our life. And so we don't want to take, we don't want to just be casual about sex. It's so dangerous. So dangerous. When I was young, the great fear was HIV. But I've always, been, how should I say it? Very conservative in this department. And so if you want to, express that on your own, well then, that's your choice. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I'm not a fan of casual affairs, because they can lead to great trouble when you mix karma with others. You can create all kinds of confusing, messy situations. And this is, some of the greatest gurus on the planet still haven't learned this lesson, So, anyways, okay, I'm going to move on here. This is from Kristen. So she writes, the Kundalini energy usually feels effortless when I lay down in a surrendered position. It can cause my head to twist and, kind of spin about a little bit. The energy only moves when I'm laying down. I feel helpless and scared. I'm trying to relax, but the energy is strong and it doesn't feel the same. It feels just quite intense, and it's not always able to flow and release the blockages. Any feedback would be great. So what, sometimes on the spiritual path we can have these very powerful energies that move through us. They can be quite intense. They can be overwhelming. It can cause us to disassociate. It can cause our head to twitch or move, or our eyes to roll back in the head. In the Christian tradition, they talked about speaking in tongues and, people going into convulsions and this and that. What you want to do, Christian, is just let the energy flow. Trust that you will be okay. Trust that this is a divine experience. You have to remember, God is giving birth in you as you. And the process of Kundalini awakening, or true spiritual awakening, has a huge energetic component. And so your body might do some strange things while the energy is kind of rewiring itself, while it's, working itself through all the blockages and kinks. Now, in regards to blockages, I like to see those. Just like children, you don't look at a child as bad. You meet a child with love. So if there's a blockage in any of your chakra centers, you're going to meet it with love. You're going to breathe into it. You're going to help your body to relax. And the big thing is just let the energy flow. It will all work itself out. And so I invite you to trust the process. Don't get all nutty or crazy in the process like most people do. Breathe. If laying on the floor works, lay on the floor and just let it flow. Let it flow. And as you truly let this energy flow, what you'll find is all these energies that feel all bound up and tight and tense, They begin to explode and release and spread out into the absolute. You begin to notice that this experience, these relative experiences where the energy feels all stuck, as it begins to release into the absolute, you notice that the energy that's releasing and the absolute are one. Going back to fear. In regards to fear, the energy of fear as it releases, it's a relative fear, but as it releases, it lets go into the groundless ground. Everything, every experience eventually unravels into the truth of the absolute, the emptiness of the absolute, the peace of the absolute. Every experience. And so the great invitation here is simply to let go, to surrender, to see that God and I are one, you and God are one, Nirvana and Samsara are one. And so, thank you all for joining me this evening. That hour went by quick. Please forgive me if I didn't get to your question. And a couple more that I just didn't get to. I was busy talking. So I want to thank you all for joining. Thank you all for sharing your hearts with me. And thank you all for your donations. And if you can, please visit my website, craigholiday.com. And there's a PayPal link which will help support this teaching. I'll support the spreading of the Dharma. So thank you all so much. And may peace be with you all. May you all have a wonderful evening or morning or whatever time of day it is where you are. May peace be with you, and may you all take good care.